Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily and sometimes, like today, more than daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman, and we're in Parliament after hearing which candidates have made it through to be officially recognised in the Tory leadership contest. Now, they each needed to have 8 nominations, 2 public, proposer and a seconder, and then 6 anonymous MPs. Isabel, who is no longer in the race?
So Sam Geimer pulled out of the race, saying that he'd realised he wasn't getting the necessary support. It was quite a late withdrawal, I have to say. We got the announcement on who was on the ballot paper about half an hour later.
Yeah, I thought he was coming to the One Nation hustings.
Oh yes, because you were chairing a One Nation hustings where Sam was supposed to come, and once again, as with Kit Malthouse the other week, he looked at what he was going to have to endure at your hands and he thought, can't do this, and he pulled out. So we're left now with 10 candidates who've made it onto the ballot paper, and that's Michael Gove, Sajid Javid, Dominic Raab, Boris Johnson, Andrea Leadsom, Esther McVeigh, Rory Stewart. God, why did I start this?
I was about to say, why did you start that? It's a very impressive task, but...
Hang on, I'm going to start again. So we're left with 10 candidates on the ballot paper, and that's Michael Gove, Matt Hancock, Mark Harper, Jeremy Hunt, Sajid Javid, Boris Johnson, Andrea Leadsom, Esther McVeigh, Dominic Raab and Rory Stewart. And we've had some of their launches today. We talked about a few of them in the earlier podcast today, yes, Katie.
And we trailed the podcast that you went to this afternoon, which was Michael Gove's. And yep. I mean, after the reports on the weekend, it was probably the most hotly anticipated of the launches. Did he manage to move the conversation away from drug use and Owen Bennett's book and move on to what he wants to be talking about, which is his leadership pitch?
Well, I think his speech was very, very good. It was typical Gove. It was well-crafted, well-structured, full of passion and belief. And he went through the various jobs he's held in government, education, justice and environment, and outlined what he'd achieved in each. And he does have an impressive track record. And he used that to say that he would then be able to deliver not just a series of domestic reforms on social care, housing and so on, but also that he'd be able to deliver Brexit. The problem is that even though I think he has moved the conversation on a bit from the drugs issue, partly actually by attacking Boris Johnson in the most explicit way out of all of the candidates so far. All the others have referred to Johnson, but not in the way that Gove did, who actually made a joke about how Boris had already pulled out before and he shouldn't pull out and he should ensure that he gets through to the final two and so on. He has moved it on a bit, but I think the damage has already been done, which is that even if Tory MPs and members don't care about Michael Gove's past drug use, it now contributes to a sense that he can't quite be trusted because of the allegations that he's been a hypocrite on this. Forget what he's actually done. It's the fact that he said one thing in public, in the press, and did another thing privately. And I think the problem is that contributes to an existing fear that he can't be trusted because of the way that he betrayed Boris Johnson in the 2016 contest, and also the fact that Tory members and MPs are worried they can't trust him on Brexit. He wasn't allowed, for instance, to audition before the senior members of the European Research Group last week because they didn't consider him to be sufficiently pure on Brexit. So he did the very best he could, I think, with his leadership launch, but I'm not sure that will be enough given that the drug story contributes to an existing weakness.
And it's interesting as well, you mentioned there about the Michael Gove, Boris Johnson dynamic, because something I've been picking up end of last week and then particularly over the weekend is that there are lots of MPs who are actually very worried that by backing Gove, they are potentially entering a Boris Gove psychodrama chapter that they thought or hoped had been left behind. And I think Owen Bennett's book, now clearly there's one claim, or not even a claim, sorry, there's one story that has generated the most interest there. But on Saturday, I had an MP complain to me about other comments in that book. So there's a chapter in which, published in the Daily Mail, in which Michael Gove is said to have had a dinner with Conservative MPs organised by Mel Stride, and one MP present, and it was clearly trying to woo support, is asked about the idea of if he regretted basically stabbing Boris Johnson in the back in the last leadership election, and he suggested he was doing a public service. Now, that has caused a lot of red lights and concerns, because it does feed again into this idea that he is a Machiavellian type character and that there is a lot of baggage there. And I think that is helping Jeremy Hunt in a sense. And as we spoke about on our earlier podcast, I was at Jeremy Hunt's launch, and I think there are people there who really do believe Jeremy Hunt could go all the way. I think there are also people who are backing Jeremy Hunt because for various reasons they don't feel able to back Boris Johnson, whether it's previous comments, constituents, or just the fact they just don't believe he is a good person to be Prime Minister. But they still think Boris Johnson is very likely to be the next Prime Minister. So with that in mind, who are they going to back? If they back Michael Gove, they think it could be seen as quite a hostile move. Jeremy Hunt, perhaps Sajid Javid, are safer bets. And there might be, I don't know, a slightly complicated way of thought process, but I definitely think it is a factor for some MPs and why Michael Gove is now falling behind Jeremy Hunt.
Oh, that's so interesting. And we've got more leadership launches, obviously, in the next few days. What are we expecting tomorrow, Katie?
So there were some doubts that these events would actually go ahead because Andrea Leadsom and Rory Stewart, it was not 100% clear they would both get the 8 votes they need. They have. So tomorrow we have Mark Harper also, Andrea Leadsom and Rory Stewart. Now, Rory Stewart's, I think, in perhaps trademark Rory Stewart leadership style, is accepted to be perhaps, I don't want to be rude about the others, but the most exciting.
Is he doing it in a barn?
It's in a tent.
It's in a tent. Joking, but there we go.
And it's also a part rally. So you're going to see him trying again to make the point to hacks and MPs who are either there or perhaps watching on that what he is trying to do here is showing that he has support if you just look to how he might fare in a general election and if you look beyond perhaps the base Tory membership.
The people who are going to elect the leader.
Yes, so it's quite convoluted.
Small flaw there.
People have some of his supporters there. I bumped into Nicholas Soames earlier, who has come out for Rory Stewart. He said he's not introducing Rory, he hasn't been asked, but he will be at this rally. So also Ken Clark is someone who has backed Rory Stewart. So it could be almost a Tory grandee grassroots type Spiegel tent rally.
Grandees from a certain wing of the party, and that's Rory Stewart's problem, isn't it?
Yeah, that's his problem. And actually, he has a few problems, hence why we don't know how far he's going to really get in this race. And his big hurdle is Thursday when we have the first secret ballot, and MPs need to go up from not just having 8 votes to having 16 votes. I think that could be a struggle for a candidate like Rory Stewart, also Andrea Leadsom. And he has the issue that there is one part of the party that are never going to agree with Rory Stewart's argument, which is that you might as well not even really bother to renegotiate the withdrawal agreement. The withdrawal agreement as it is an undervalued piece of art and everyone should be grateful. But then you also have the group he should be able to appeal to, so the One Nation Caucus, but yet within that group, he has a credibility problem. So if you were to look purely at Rory Stewart's politics and his pitch, you would think that that is something that someone like Amber Rudd, potentially Nicky Morgan, would have in common with than some of the other candidates. But there is a view that he isn't actually the person who can get far enough, so you're better placed going somewhere else. I think, well, the only route really available to Rory if he wants to get those votes is to try and answer that credibility question, because I mean, Brexiteers, ERG, or just people who voted Leave, I think might be a little bit sceptical of his position.
Yes, and you saw we had Dominic Raab earlier, who was taking quite an unashamedly sort of pro-Brexiteer stance in his pitch, and the problem is that they are much more powerful in the party than the Rory Stewart constituency, as you say. But you've been talking to the One Nation Tories again this evening. You've been hosting another one of their hustings, which obviously Sam Gyimah was too frightened to attend. But who did you have instead?
So this was the final hustings, and I think it's fair to say these are the candidates, and it's partly down to timing, but you currently have less support than some of their rivals, such as Boris Johnson. So today it was the final two, and that was Mark Harper and Esther McVeigh. Now, Esther McVeigh, I think, stands out as someone who probably on paper has the least in common with the One Nation Caucus. And that's not because she's not a One Nation Conservative. I think we've now said many times, most Conservatives would describe themselves as a One Nation Tory, and she did. It's just the One Nation Caucus is very specifically a caucus which is very sceptical about a no-deal Brexit. Now, she made her case, and she said that she wanted to be honest in politics, and she didn't really believe this idea that you would be able to negotiate in the time frame available for the new leader and Leave at the end of October. So her priority was preparing for no deal if she were to become Prime Minister and leaving at the end of October, whether that involves proroguing Parliament or not. I think what's interesting from that is, as we are seeing more from Boris Johnson, we saw in the Sunday Times at the weekend him laying out his Brexit pitch. He was saying that he wants to withhold the money till he knows exactly what they're getting, and he wants to get rid of the backstop entirely, and he wants to leave at the end of October. Now, I don't think Esther McVeigh will win many votes in the One Nation caucus. I don't think she thinks that either.
Yep.
But she might offer, I suppose, she might in a way hinder some of the other arguments her Brexit rivals are making by highlighting her view that that isn't possible in the time frame.
You mentioned Boris Johnson. One of the things that I found really interesting about the past couple of weeks and about today is the way the candidates, his rivals, have actually given him quite a free pass. Obviously, we've talked a lot about how he's not doing very much in this contest. His leadership campaign team have sort of locked him in a cupboard and decided that the riskiest thing to do is to give him more exposure. But it's interesting that the other candidates have been so focused on ensuring that they are the person who becomes number two on the ballot paper, they've actually really forgotten to attack Johnson. And there's a risk here for them that they don't establish a narrative that encourages Tory members to feel nervous about the prospect of him as Prime Minister. And they need to establish that early on, because he's so popular and because he's got such a strong brand. There needs to be a proper attack strategy from those candidates. There hasn't been that so far. Obviously, today we saw really for the first time proper attacks on Boris, but they were still quite defensive hits from all of the candidates, rather than them going on the offensive about, for instance, whether or not he was a good foreign secretary, which is very hard to find any Conservative MP, even those actually who are backing his leadership campaign, who think that he was a good example of a foreign secretary. That needs to start now if those candidates are serious about beating him in the final two.
Yeah, I think we've heard a lot about the Stop Boris operation, but yeah, it's been pretty low level. It's not been very clear to spot. It's in part because we had Stop Raab. People decided Dominic Raab was a scarier bet. But I think on Boris Johnson, I do think the more he says and does, the more criticism he might receive. And you do sense this week, nothing major, but he has launched this idea on income tax, which would help people who earn 80k. Now, that has landed, I think, fairly badly with some of the party. You saw Michael Gove going on an attack on it. I think we might see more of that. And I would watch out for the hustings. And we have 1922 hustings Tuesday and Wednesday night. And they're behind closed doors, but MPs get to ask questions. Now, you might start to see operation, which is to ask critical questions about his record and get him to answer that. And I think that could be how MPs begin to try and attack him.
Thank you, Katie.
Thanks, Isabel, and thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow unless something else really dramatic happens this evening.
And do please send your feedback to our wonderful podcast email address. We've got some more to report. One was, Dear Mr. Nelson, this was addressed to Fraser, for reasons of safety, please keep Ms. Hardman off the podcast. So I'm sorry about that. Your safety has once again been compromised. Thanks for listening.